The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Great to be with you on today's program. We got one comment here. Actually, we got several, but I'll read one. We noticed for the first time that we were unable to get this show on the video feed in on the YouTube channel. Was this a mistake or was it blocked by YouTube? In fact, it was blocked by YouTube. We evidently violated their terms of service. Sam tells me that the problem with the show, they didn't elaborate. They just said there was an impersonation problem. And so far as I can remember, I gave no impersonations yesterday on the program. So, but whatever it was, they didn't like it. Hopefully, today it will go through without interruption. I know during the campaign season leading up to November 3rd, you can be sure that big tech and social media, they're going to be doing everything that they can to carefully screen things in hopes that a radical Democrat will win the election. And of course, leaving that aside, don't even get me started on all of the filthy content that's regularly allowed on YouTube and even encouraged or promoted by YouTube, by Google. So in any event, we've gotten some good mileage out of the YouTube channel. Hopefully that will continue for a while longer while the world continues to burn. Little Kenosha, Wisconsin, the violence, the burning, the looting, it's not subsiding. It was even worse last night. You look at some of the images, you'd be forgiven if you thought of the footage from Kenosha last night was something out of Baghdad or Kabul, something from the Middle East. And yet this is a little suburb of Milwaukee and Chicago, just a small town of about 100,000 people. They call it a bedroom community because most of the people that live there work in either of the two big cities. So they come home to Kenosha to live a relatively peaceable life, I guess. And here in the last couple of nights, you've seen car dealerships smashed up. And then I think it was the same scene at this dealership where all of these cars, so many of them, were torched, lit on fire. There's video of businesses totally engulfed in flames. And you just saw a bit a moment ago, men roaming the streets with rifles. The local jail also engulfed in flames. There you see people smashing and stomping on cars and then lighting them ablaze. Now, what triggered this latest episode of looting and violence and arson is this Jacob Blake that was shot the other night. You see the video, and the first thing that comes to my mind is, why is he resisting arrest? Why is he resisting? Why, when they're telling him to get on the ground, does he insist on getting up and walking away from the police officers and then opening his car door and reaching into his car? For what? So many things we don't even know about this. And then you get into the rap sheet on this guy. Not that he deserves to be shot to death. I don't even know if he's dead, but not that he deserves to be shot for something that happened 5 years ago. But there are fruits there, or a lack of them. And then this happens, and as I told you yesterday, you have the governor who's a Democrat, and he rushes forward with a statement saying that, well, we don't know all the details. Listen, I'm with the support, I'm with the protesters on the streets. He's not the first black man to be shot, or as the governor said, mercilessly killed. That's the way he views that little snippet of footage. Mercilessly killed. And then the mayor of the city, of course, is a Democrat. So you've got, once again, Democrat leadership from top to bottom. And none of them, it would seem, will even come out and condemn the rioting. I guess that the governor last night did call on the National Guard. Too little, too late for these many businesses. What about the car dealership? I guess BLM would say, well, they've got insurance. As the cities of America go up in flames, you know, this one was a little bit different than even some of the others that we've seen. It's a small community, and from the footage we viewed this morning, it was a small group of people. This violence, this looting, this arson, it could have been put down easily if you just had some show of force. But we can't have any of that because, well, the policemen, the law enforcement, they're the problem. A few dozen people roaming the streets. I saw one clip of a woman who said, I don't even think these guys are from Kenosha. They just come in. They probably came in from Chicago. Maybe some of the same guys that were destroying the Magnificent Mile a few weeks ago. Whipped up into a frenzy. Social media. Police shooting. As if the police are just targeting blacks all over the world. Well, they certainly are in other areas, or at least criminals. I mentioned the other day what's happening in India. How many cases of police brutality per year? It makes the United States seem like nothing, really. What does it take to whip up the mob into a frenzy? Jeremiah 22 and verse 7, it says, but your eyes and your heart are not but for your covetousness and for to shed innocent blood and for oppression and for violence to do it. We're seeing human nature in all of its ugliness on full display daily. Jesus said in the Gospels, out of the heart of men proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lasciviousness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness. It's on the streets. What happens when you don't have law and order? Well, you have what's described in the Bible. Human nature run amok. Human nature with no restraints. The prophet Isaiah said their feet run to evil. They run to evil. And they make haste to shed innocent blood. Their thoughts are thoughts of iniquity, wasting, wasting, how about that last phrase? Wasting and destruction are in their paths. They just leave a trail of destruction. They leave a path of waste and destruction. That word wasting in the Hebrew, it means desolation, destruction, oppression, robbery, spoiled, wasting. That's what we're seeing. That's what we're seeing from city to city. Portland, Seattle, Chicago, New York, Minneapolis. Now, little Kenosha. Just a little suburb community. And so when the president's administration or when commentators that are terrified by these scenes say that, look, this could come to a city near you. You think they're exaggerating? People can see what's happening on the nightly newscast. Well, if they're watching the right one anyway. Because there's a good many of them, they're just trying to cover it up. There's a good many of them that still say it's peaceful. Mostly peaceful. Mostly. Really? Is it mostly peaceful? Are these protesters out there just trying to find a meal to help feed their families? Is that why they're smashing the windshields of these cars in the dealership? Is that why they're setting these cars on fire? Is that what this is about? Of course not. This is about a violent overthrow of government at the local level, and they're wanting to take it all the way up to the national level. They're wanting to take it all the way up to the White House. We've got to overturn the system. We've got to do away with law enforcement. This is anarchy. This is anarchy. And as I said on yesterday's program, my father was talking about this 5-6 years ago. saying that the law enforcement, that's the last line of defense. The last line. Here the world's going up in flames. So many of our cities anyway. And you've got all these people in powerful positions that want to carefully frame the narrative so that you only see what they want you to see. And how corrupt is that? Everyone, of course, has to make editorial decisions each day with their content. But how corrupt is that? To have some, probably some 20-something in there saying, we've got to take away this video because, well, I mean, there's a lot of religion, and it talks about things that could happen before the return of Christ, including a civil war. That gets deleted, while other things, appalling evil, is just proudly displayed day in and day out. President Trump said this yesterday about the aim of the radical left, clip 5.
The other thing I've done, aside from very strongly protecting your Second Amendment, which was not easy. That was not easy. And by the way, they will take your guns away as sure as you're standing or sitting there. They will take your guns away, either that or obliterate the Second Amendment. The right to bear arms. You have the right to bear arms, especially when you look at a Portland and you see how weak those Democrats are. The governor, the mayor, how pathetic. They let them riot every night. We're saying, let us come in and solve your problem. We will solve it for you in 1 hour, just like we did in Minneapolis, Minnesota, right? 5 nights, 6 nights. They have to ask us in. Let us come in. We'll solve your problem. They're almost used to it. This is the way our whole country would be if you ever let a thing like this happen. Our whole country would be.
That's the president yesterday. That was at the Republican National Convention, by the way. A little livelier than the Democratic Convention last week, where for 4 days we didn't see Joe Biden until right at the very end. And he spoke for 24 minutes reading from that teleprompter. And I mean, it was his finest hour. It was the best he had ever spoken. And here comes President Trump, first night of his convention, speaks for, I think, about an hour. And you hear a bit of it right there. A lot of it's off the cuff. This is a man who sees what he's up against. He knows they want to destroy. He knows these cities are getting used to it. And he knows that they want it to spread. And it will spread over the whole country. If someone doesn't stand up to it, you just look at the contrast again between these two conventions. Victor Davis Hanson. It's almost humorous because you do look at it and think, well, is this all meant to be a joke? He points out the DNC is irony to parody. Bill Clinton talks about the dignity in the Oval Office. Barack Obama talks about upholding the Constitution. This is from last week. Elizabeth Warren is put on the DNC Native American Caucus Committee. Really? Is this serious? Andrew Cuomo brags about COVID success in New York. He wrote a book about it, about how he responded. That was all from last week. And so out come the Republicans swinging away. Yesterday, here's a bit more from President Trump, clip 1.
What they're doing is using COVID to steal an election.
Right. Right.
They're using COVID to defraud the American people, all of our people, of a fair and free election. And we can't do that. And don't let them give you the post office stuff.
That's quite a statement. One that we've been waiting for at this program for quite some time. They're using COVID to steal the election, to defraud the American people. They're using the pandemic. They're using the crisis. He's on to them. He sees At least now he sees that this is just the latest salvo of a nonstop attack on the presidency of the United States. You look at their history. They were trying to steal and tamper with and disrupt the election from the beginning, back in 2016. And it continues through to this day. President Trump said this, clip two.
In a very, very nice way, I will tell you, they are trying to steal the election, just like they did it last time with spying, and we caught them, and that included President Obama, and that included, let's be nice, Biden. This could only happen in North Carolina. But that included them, and they got caught. And then somebody said, well, what are you going to do? Well, we can't attack a president. Oh, I see. If it was me. They said, we can't attack a president. We caught him. We caught him cold. And they say, we can't attack. He was at meetings talking about it. And by the way, this was spying before and after. And I think it's a disgrace to our country. I think we can never let that happen again.
It's an excellent point. He's talking about Obama there toward the end. And those that would say, well, you can't go all the way to the top. You can't actually go after Barack Obama because, well, he's a president. He's a former president. You don't go after a president. And look at what they've been doing to this president. Look at how they've been going after this president. Here they're using COVID-19, the Wuhan flu. They're using a flu to steal an election. We've got to do all mail-in ballots. We've got to just send out millions and millions and millions of ballots to everyone. Maybe 2-3 ballots per house. Even if they're deceased, just send it out. If they've been on a voter roll before, send out the ballots. That's what they want. Why? So they can steal it, of course. You've got it, like President Trump said last week. You want to show up for one of the small gatherings at the DNC, you've got to show ID. You've got to be checked for whatever. But here, the presidential election, the president of the United States. They just want to blitz the country with ballots galore. And then, as the president has asked, who controls it? Who monitors it? Who checks it? They don't want those checks. They don't want it to be monitored because they want to cheat. They want to do anything, like my father's explained, they want to do anything and everything they can to return to power. They're obsessed with power. They're drunk. They were drunk on power. Where they have it, they're drunk. They don't have it now in the White House, so they'll do anything. Never let a crisis go to waste. Listen to what we said. This is back on March 16th, and you'll recall that the middle of March is when the world just absolutely turned on its head with the national emergencies and the pandemic declaration and all of that. Listen to what we said on March 16th, clip 7. What was it Rahm Emanuel said many years ago? Never let a crisis go to waste. And that's what we're seeing here. This is why they're so giddy at CNN and MSNBC, because this is the crisis. The way they view it, this is the one that could finally bring down the president. This is the one that could finally lead to a recession. That could finally get us a Democrat in office this November. That was this program back on March 16th telling you, tomorrow's news today, you see, telling you that this pandemic is to be politicized. It will be politicized. And the truth of it now, we have the benefit of hindsight, it was being politicized even in March, even at the height of the hysteria. Now, you had some sound reporting going on this program during that time. There wasn't much of it to go around. But now look, now you get to the end of August here, and it's so obvious they're using it, like the president said yesterday, they're using it to steal the election. They have to extend it right on through to November 3 in the hopes, in the hopes that they can drive the economy into the ground, and that's not happening. So again, they're panicking. They're pulling out all the stops, exploiting this crisis in any way that they can. The president commented on what Joe Biden said last week at his convention about how that if the expert, no, I guess this was the interview, we played the clip yesterday, but the interview where Mr. Biden talked about, well, sure, I'd shut the country down if the experts said so. This is clip three.
Biden the other day said, no, he'd shut it down. He'd listen to some guy say, and he'd shut it down. We just broke a record on jobs, an all-time record. There's never been 3 months where we've put more people to work, over 9 million people. And again, we're just about ready to break the all-time stock market record. I mean, you look at it, we're just about ready to do it again.
See, those commentators back in March, they were positively giddy because this was supposed to destroy him. He was supposed to be out of the race by now. He was supposed to be so far behind by now because the economy was about to grind to a halt. The country was in total lockdown. There wouldn't be any movement for months. They said, oh, 15 days and we'll stop the spread and we'll carry right on. But they kept moving the goalposts. They kept changing the narrative. They kept making excuses for their many failures, for their many false predictions. Embarrassing predictions. And then through it all, they carefully concealed the truth about the virus, for one, about how it was being politicized, about how the Trump administration was responding to it. He says there that Mr. Biden would listen to some guy, that would be the experts, and then he just shut down the economy. That's not on the table as one of the options now, at least for this president, who, as I say, is onto them. He sees what they're doing with this crisis. They're not letting it go to waste. Listen again to what the president said last night, clip four.
I just want to thank the people of North Carolina because, to be honest with you, I felt an obligation to be here. You have a governor who's in a total shutdown mood. I guarantee on November 4th, it'll all open up. It'll be fine, like most other states. On November 4th, you know, these Democrat governors, they love shutdown until after the election's over because they want to make our numbers look as bad as possible for the economy.
He's totally right about that. And that's, again, a point we've made on this program. It's the worst crisis in the history of the world until November 4th, assuming Joe Biden gets into office. As I've said before, if Hillary Clinton was in office right now, there would be a totally different narrative on this crisis, on this pandemic. On November 4th, it'll all just disappear. That shutdown mood will be over if they get what they want. Now, again, let me take you back to what we were saying in March. This now is from a program on March 20th. With one of our favorite titles, World War Flu. That was March 20th, a few months ago. Clip 8. Well, the cure is far worse than the disease. That's what we've been pointing out this past week. As bad as the disease might be, the cure, all of these extreme draconian measures put in place, look at the impact. America's still under attack. It didn't stop because of the election in November of 2016. It's still being attacked. The goal here is to blot out America, to blot out the administration. And so that's why you see this concerted effort to make the country more chaotic. So that's based upon a prophecy, 2 Kings 14. If you've listened to this program at all over the last 2.5 years, you're very familiar with that. The goal is to blot out this administration, to blot out the nation, to blot out the name of Israel. One more clip from that same program, clip 9. I'm still working to try to put all the pieces together, but the more you look into it, the more you can see that we have been, once again, we have been lied to. We're not getting the truth. We're not getting the full truth. It's like one of our listeners said recently, you know, saying fake news is being nice. These are lies. Like we said back on March 20th there, we're being lied to. There was a Washington Post headline yesterday. The U.S. forced major manufacturers to build ventilators. Now they're piling up unused in a strategic reserve. Well, how could we force manufacturers to build these? It was because of what Cuomo and others were screaming about. Cuomo said he needed 40,000 ventilators. And here's the president helping him, sending him ventilators, sending him beds, sending him Navy ships, sending him PPE, all that he asked for. The president, by the way, released a video on handling the pandemic crisis. And that's full of all these clips from Democrats. The governor of New York, the governor of California, Mayor de Blasio, praising President Trump. And that's not going to sit well with the Democrat media complex. Here comes the Washington Post headline. Well, we forced these manufacturers and now we have too many. Well, who's the one that was hyping this story, that was scaring the public and bringing about some of these events? It's like they've totally forgotten what they wrote about a few months ago. They just dust themselves off and, you know, quickly move on with the next fake headline. Wall Street Journal says new thinking on COVID lockdowns. They're overly blunt and costly. So there's more stories like this coming out that are looking back and saying, you know what? I think this was a pretty big mistake. And this article points out how that nobody really knew going in how the lockdown strategy would even work. And then they got into it. And like I covered on Friday's program, because of human vanity, because of arrogance, and you throw in a bit of stupidity, and they can't bring themselves to admit they got it all wrong. So it's like a comedy of errors. And it's gone on for months. Someone yesterday retweeted this New York Times article from, I think it's June 20th. But this article, I don't know why we didn't notice it back then, but it talks about the Chinese government-funded Twitter accounts that were out there in full force back in February and March of this year, tweeting about how great the response to the pandemic was in Wuhan and all across China. China just handled this beautifully. And of course, Italy picked up on that. They were the first nation outside of the communist sphere to embrace these draconian measures, a communist-style crackdown, a lockdown, even the word itself. You think it would alarm more people in Britain and the United States? A lockdown? What do you mean a lockdown? Well, that's what the communist state of China imposed on its people. So here was all this propaganda on Twitter, on social media. There was one case where they praised China's lockdowns and then they ridiculed America's response. This was posted in two tweets, and it received 382,000 retweets and 1.1 million likes. And this article points out how that a lot of these accounts, they didn't even have that many tweets. You know, it was like 7 followers and 3 tweets. And then one of the tweets says, China did great. America, they won't do anything. And then it just gets retweeted. Hundreds of thousands. Just to give you a comparison, President Trump, he's got one of the most famous Twitter accounts in the world. And he'll get a couple hundred thousand likes and maybe 50 to 60,000 retweets with a popular tweet. This is one example covered by the New York Times, 382,000 retweets, 1.1 million likes. So how much just to go back to this article in the New York Times, and maybe this is the New York Times just covering its tracks, knowing how this is going to be covered down the road when historians look back. But how much of the Twitter mob favoring these lockdowns was just made up of Chinese government-run accounts? Propagandists, in other words. And here come the gullible Western nations that say, well, I guess we got to do what China did. And there's more to the story, of course. A lot of the leaders in our nations, they are themselves radical leftist Marxists. So they want this. They're obsessed with gaining power and more of it. They're drunk on power, where you have these premiers in Victoria, Australia, the governors, as I say, in New York and California. Meanwhile, the facts continue to roll in, not nearly as fast as they should be, because of the corrupt media. This is from The Express here in the UK. UK's lockdown was a monumental mistake and must not happen again, Boris's scientist says. So this is a leading epidemiologist here in the UK, not Neil Ferguson, thankfully, but someone else, an expert, who actually has enough sense to say this was a catastrophic mistake. We can't make this again. What did we say on this program back in March? We're being lied to. We're not getting the truth here. It says here in the article, lockdown was a panic measure, and I believe history will say trying to control COVID-19 through lockdown was a monumental mistake on a global scale. The cure was worse than the disease. Where have you heard that before? Where have you heard that? It was in the Trumpet a few months ago. Tomorrow's News Today. It says here, I never want to see national lockdown again. It was always a temporary measure that simply delayed the stage of the epidemic we see now. It was never going to change anything fundamentally. However low, we drove down the number of cases. And now we know more about the virus and how to track it. We should not be in this position again. We absolutely should never return to a position where children cannot play or go to school. We should never do this again, says this professor, says this epidemiologist. We should never let this happen again. We should never make this catastrophic mistake again. One of the few voices to actually come out and tell you the truth. What a horrible mistake. The cure is worse than the disease. But look at how so many, who just hang on every word coming from CNN and the New York Times and the Washington Post and the BBC. And if the experts there say, hey, you lock it down, hey, you strap on all the gear, well, then you've got to do that if you're a good liberal. And then if you see some lady coming out of church and she doesn't have a mask on, just pop her in the face. That happened just the other day. Yeah, we're all the police now. We're all radical leftist police. That's where the police is good. If you're policing on your own, take action. You know, you can commit acts of violence, and it's justified. As long as you're smashing someone's face who's not wearing a mask, or smashing someone's automobiles at a dealership, that just happens to be there. You've got to do it. You've got to do it for who is it? Jacob Blake? He's a hero now, I guess, in the black community. I think of Candace Owens and what she said about the black community and the heroes that they worship. How about raising the bar? How about looking at some of the leading voices, the true leading voices in the black community, like Thomas Sowell and Larry Elder, Candace Owens, for example. Listen to what Alan Jones, this is the Australian commentator. We've played a couple clips from him on the last two programs. Here's clip 10.
We continue to be led by alarmist politicians making it up as they go along. Thankfully, the public are waking up. I mentioned before that it matters little to these leaders that the well-being of children is being sacrificed. Year 12 students look forward to a school formal. In the totalitarian world we inhabit now, they have been banned. No debate, no parliamentary endorsement, just a fiat, just a directive. And what's more, boys, especially in relation to sport, and girls, find representing at the highest level the pinnacle of school excitement. GPS rugby's now been suspended, which most probably means cancelled, when these young people have been looking forward to representing their school at the highest level all their lives. Now it's taken away. A health officer has said there'll be new rules for school sport, new bans on regional and state competition to stop people from mixing together. So in New South Wales, all sporting activities have been called off overnight. Well done, Gladys. Netball state titles way down. In late September, they've been called off, and the girls have been training for months. And they now have to sit an HSC with all this emotional trauma of disappointment. This borders, in my view, on criminal damage to the well-being of young people. All award ceremonies, all dinners banned. And to give you a measure of the stupidity and ad hocery, we're told that guidelines for spectators have been tightened up. Spectators? Haven't these dopes called off all sporting activity? What is there to see? All school sport in New South Wales cancelled immediately. This is totalitarian madness with no scientific basis.
No scientific basis for this totalitarian madness. See, we were lied to from the beginning. Criminal damage, in his estimation. What did the leading epidemiologist here in the UK say? We should never return to a position where children cannot play or go to school. He said, I believe the harm lockdown is doing to our education, healthcare access, and broader aspects of our economy and society will turn out to be at least as great as the harm done by COVID-19. So the response, or as we said back in March, and then again in the Trumpet magazine, the cure is worse than the disease. And all for what? All for this totalitarian madness. Here again is what my father said in March, the March issue of the Trumpet. The Democrats are demonstrating that there is virtually no limit to what they are willing to do to attack the president and undermine the last election and the next one. Meanwhile, revelations continue to emerge about their abuse of the intelligence agencies to spy on Americans, even the president himself. People need to understand what a dangerous threat this is to the very foundation of this nation. They're still trying to destroy him. And now, like the president said yesterday, first day of the campaign, they're using COVID-19 to try to steal the election, to try to overturn the results of the previous election. Listen to Nancy Pelosi. She's the Speaker of the House. She's what, third in line for the presidency? Listen to what she said yesterday about the presidency, clip 11.
We take an oath to protect and defend the Constitution from all enemies, foreign and domestic. And sadly, the domestic enemies to our voting system and our honoring our Constitution are right at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue with their allies in the Congress of the United States.
That's 1600 Pennsylvania. That's the White House. And then the allies in Congress, those are Republicans. These are enemies of the Constitution, domestic enemies. She cites the Constitution that they say an oath to protect and defend the Constitution from all enemies, foreign and domestic. So here is this, and you heard the MSNBC reporter. He's there kind of mumbling in the background. Wow. That's powerful. That's the media today when the Speaker of the House says that the president of the United States is an enemy of the Constitution. Now, you might recall that the president himself, he's been out there for years saying that these people, and he would point to them at rallies, these people on press row, they're enemies of the people. And you remember how offended and frightened the press was whenever President Trump would say enemies of the people. Listen to this montage, clip 20.
We've got a president that has already named journalists as being the enemy of the people. So don't be surprised when other countries take on a journalist, murder him, chop him into pieces, and dispose of him.
To the whole notion of the press as the enemy of the people, with the, all of its echoes of totalitarianism, of terror, of tyrants.
Enemy of the people. And that phrase is from Stalin and Hitler.
Does that bother you when he calls the enemy of the people?
I think it's outrageous, and I have been on the record.
Do you think it's dangerous?
Yes.
Direct line to a fascist.
It is incitement to violence.
This incendiary rhetoric is encouraging threats and violence against journalists.
That talking about enemies of the people is a Stalinist phrase.
That his rhetoric creates a dangerous climate.
I will say, I think it's a little bit dangerous.
To label the press or anybody else enemy of the people is a totalitarian tool of dictators.
But now, now that they're using this same language and saying it's the president, he's not just an enemy of the people. He's an enemy of the state. He's an enemy of the Constitution. And his friends in Congress, the Republicans, they're guilty too. The whole lot of them, they're enemies. Enemies of the state. It says there's only one reason. This is from the president the other day. There's only one reason. They're going on about the Postal Service and not wanting voter ID, and that's because they want to cheat. So they're out there, like Ms. Pelosi, saying that he's a totalitarian, he's an enemy of the state, and he's trying to steal the election, guilty of the very things that they charge. One last bit from Nancy Pelosi, clip 12.
They're doing everything they can, suppress the vote with your actions, scare people, intimidate right. by saying law enforcement will be there, diminish the role of the postal system in all of this. It's really actually shameful. Enemies of the state.
Enemies of the state. Enemies of the state. My father wrote in the article from March, he said, the radical left and its anti-American Marxist ideas have virtually taken control of America's Democrat Party. Democrats have taken to heart Barack Obama's pledge to fundamentally transform America. And look at the ways they want to transform it. Listen to this. This is my father back in March. They want to tear down America's history. This is before June and July. This is before May, June, and July. This is before the summer of burning. They want to tear down America's history, America's Constitution, America's moral standards, America's freedoms. They want to take away America's freedoms as well. That's the trumpet back in March. The article was probably finished off in late February, maybe earlier. Tomorrow's news today. He said they want to redistribute the nation's prosperity, revolutionize its economy, and revise its form of government. That's their aim. And we're seeing it play out, this strategy. We're seeing it play out on the streets of America. We're seeing it play out in the halls of Congress. We take an oath to protect the Constitution. We take an oath to defend the Constitution from all enemies, foreign and domestic. And one of those domestic enemies, he's in the White House. He is an enemy of the Constitution. He is an enemy of the state. That's from the third in line to the presidency, the Speaker of the House of Representatives. We're seeing, as my father has said, just how far the radical left is willing to go to grab hold of power. This is what it's all about for them, to gain hold of power. Well, I'm just trying to see what I can edit out because we've got so much content, so much information, but I'd like to get to a few emails if I have the time later. So we'll take a break now and come back and tie up a few loose ends. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, You can send emails to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Flurry's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
So last week I bought a bucket of suet. These are, I guess there's probably like 50 or 60 mashed up balls of suet, which I believe my wife was trying to educate me on this. I believe it's some kind of animal fat. And so in addition to the seed that I've been putting out on the bird feeder, I put one of these balls of suet out there a couple of days ago. And so some of the bigger birds have been chipping away at it for the last couple of days, and about half of it was left. And then this morning, this magpie shows up. This is from the crow family. It shows up and snatches a few seeds. Sam's got some video of this to help you see. You can see the suet there right at this front edge of the feeder. He gets some seed there, and then he takes the suet, and he took the whole thing. And you can see him disappear from the picture. Then he comes back up into the trees. He's so top-heavy, he's probably taken about a third of his body weight. Maybe not a third, but that's pretty heavy. That's pretty heavy. And watch when he takes off. Watch, he'll sink down. He can hardly lift it. He barely made it over the edge there. So he had a ball back in the trees, I assume, literally. He had a ball of suet. It says this in the Society for the Protection of Birds. It says, magpies seem to be jacks of all trades, scavengers, predators, and pest destroyers. Their challenging, almost arrogant attitude has won them few friends. And I have to say, they're not one of my favorites. The crows, they're not my favorite. They eat a lot. And then, as you just saw, they don't let the suet hang around for very long either. In any event, some exciting new news out at the bird feeder. And speaking of bird feeders, someone sent me this clip. I think this comes from the Northeast somewhere. Maybe it's around where Vice President Biden lives up in Delaware. But this is someone who, in his community, he's famous for the birdhouses that he's made. Here's clip 16.
The whole world watching Wilmington's Hotel DuPont, where Joe Biden will likely introduce his running mate, but maybe he should bring her here.
It represents the city of Wilmington.
Artist Tom Burke, known for his extravagant birdhouses all along the Wilmington riverfront, has now made this.
From Wilmington to the White House.
A Joe Biden-inspired birdhouse that on one side is a replica of the Biden train station that sits behind it, and on the other side is the White House. Tom does not believe he is jinxing Biden by doing this, and he's happy to see this huge labor of love finally on its perch in Tubman Garrett Park.
This is the best this has been, getting this thing up in the air, birdhouse-wise. This is very cool.
So as if we need one more component of our society politicized, here, sadly, bird feeding, the birdhouses. This, too, has been politicized. Here comes the Biden supporter. You have to give that man some credit. Those are some spectacular birdhouses that he's made. And maybe we should look at the positive side of this and use this as incentive to dress things up out around the bird feeder. In any event, we appreciate one of our faithful listeners sending us that humorous clip there of someone that hopes that his creation, inspired by Joe Biden, hopes that it doesn't put a curse on his campaign and that instead he gets into the White House. A few comments from our listeners. The only program I look forward to and follow on YouTube at 10 p.m. Monday to Friday, Melbourne, Australia. Our listeners from, it says, amazing program that gives hope and strengthens one's faith in the Almighty God during these unfruitful times and events happening in this state and all over the world. This is someone, again, coming from Victoria down in Australia. It says, keep up the amazing job of speaking God's truth from His Holy Bible. This one here from Canada, it says, good morning from Toronto. You are most wonderful, it says. I appreciate everything you report for the love of God's truth. Another one writes succinctly, thank you, Mr. Fleury, for your hardworking crew. Love you guys very much. Another one says, thank you for the podcast. I pray we can just get more watchers, more viewers. Another one says, everyone watching, please share this till we can get billions watching. Wow, that's someone that's thinking big. The largest audience possible, right? I understand the Bible more because of the Philadelphia Trumpet, Trumpet Daily, and all the other literature. If you have children, send them to Herbert W. Armstrong College in Oklahoma. So this is someone that wants you and your family immersed into God's work. Another one here writes from Texas, just wanted to say hello from Odessa. I watch your daily show when I can. I usually watch later on YouTube. I love your boldness in standing for the truth. Not many people stand up for God anymore. Your father, Gerald Fleury, was the one to really show me the light. I'd been searching for about a year when I found the Key of David program. I'd been to many churches, but couldn't find the one God was leading me to. It's been a couple of years now. I continue to watch, learn, listen, and pray. I know now the PCG is God's true church. I've read all the published booklets. That's amazing. Alongside my Bible for reference and validity, I have peace, joy, and hope, the hope I'd been seeking for my whole life. I have a fire inside me now. I just want to share with all those around me. Unfortunately, you'd think I have the plague because of trying to share this with his friends. Another one here says, speaking of quarantines, I went to the library to take out a couple of videos, and the young lady brought them to my car because they only have curbside service. It says the girl was masked and gloved down and proceeded to tell me that the library quarantines all its materials before and after releasing them to the public. She went on to say that according to science, the material should be, the material he got from the library, that is, that it should be laid on the table, social distancing style, for 4 days, and then the virus will just fall off automatically. This is good science right here, good science. I thought to myself, this is madness on steroids. And then I remembered Isaiah 60 and verse 2, for behold, the darkness shall cover the earth, and gross darkness the people, but the eternal shall arise upon you, and his glory shall be seen upon you. That comes from, well, I'm not sure where that is from, actually. Another one here says, thanks for all your hard work. The program is a wonderful beacon in a world full of deception, especially here in Canada, where fear and emotion rule the media. Another one here says, thank you so much for such a powerful program. You're the only one who's exposing the devil on a national level. The program today was spot on for news analysis and dissecting the fake news. And then this one here also comes from Canada. It says, it's a good thing you played the clip twice last week of Kamala Harris, her statement about the coronavirus. It was incredulous the first time. The second time, insane, was all I could think of. It says, and listening to all the Trump-bashing comments just dripping with hypocrisy was hard to stomach, knowing what the radical left has been up to the last few years. It made me wonder if not having an audience emboldened them to make these outlandish remarks and bold-faced lies. It says, not that they feel they are compelled to be accountable anyway for what they say. Maybe it gave them a false sense of bravado. She's just commenting on the fact that they had the convention and that there was no audience there. In any event, it says, looks like a sinking ship to me. And if I was voting American, I don't think I'd want to be on board when it goes down. So that's a few comments that came in from our listeners over the last several days. If you'd like to comment or send in an email, you can send that to kpctd@kpcg.fm. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.